Hello. Welcome to Misfortune, a financial crimes podcast, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Danger Van Gorder.
Hey everybody, welcome to Misfortune, a financial crimes podcast.
We just started.
We did just start. Yeah. I am Adam Todd Brown.
My name is Michael Danger Van Gorder. It's nice to talk to you.
Michael Van Gorder, my co-host.
Ugh, God, I hate
you said it first.
I know. I just hate Michael. Ugh.
It's such a solid American, all-American boy name.
I mean, that's what it is. It's a very special boy's name, you know, who's
you know why? You know,
he's got the attendance record.
Because you're very special boy.
Right. I've been trying to shed that image for many years.
Name a Michael throughout history who's done anything bad.
I mean, there's Michael Myers. Nah, he's made up.
Those Austin Powers sequels were garbage.
Right. Michael Eisner ran the Disney company for a while. I'm sure some people don't particularly
care
for him.
What a monster.
I think Michael Jordan is
don't
a good duel.
Don't you say it!
I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of bad Michaels, and I can only
well,
think
I don't
of
know
good,
why you even mentioned Michael Jordan.
I mean,
he's good at sports, and he's good at gambling. He's just bad at keeping his father alive.
Oh, yeah. I like that episode where Jordan rides the bus. That was really the 30 for 30 on his year in baseball. It was really interesting.
Maybe.
But I can't name a bad Michael. I'm sure there's out there. And listeners, if you can think of a bad Michael...
Michael Jackson maybe did some shit.
Michael Jackson was a weird, troubled soul.
Oh, that's such a gentle way to put it.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a book by Pat Harris, who was his defense attorney, and his defense attorney swears up and down in the book, you know, long after Michael Jackson has passed away, that he didn't think that Michael Jackson diddled any kids.
Aphrodite Jones has a book about that also. She is
that a real person's name?
She's a true crime writer who I have beefed with on a couple podcasts.
You beefed with a lot of folks in your time.
Well, it's because she refuses
ratio.
She refuses to believe that Michael Peterson's wife was killed by an owl.
Specifically an owl?
It was an owl.
An owl.
But that's a different kind of crime podcast.
Pat Harris, that same attorney.
Also killed by an owl?
Also defended Scott Peterson.
Oh.
Yeah.
He didn't do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, he's running for Senate right now, and he's...
Scott Peterson? He's not going to win.
No, he's not going to win, but no, Pat Harris is running for Senate in California.
Yeah.
He's a very exciting progressive candidate. Really like him. And his book's really good. It's called Mistrial.
What's it about?
It's about how we used to sort of idolize defense attorneys, like, you know, the Atticus Finches, you know, back in the day, like
sure.
they were like seen as these heroes. And then over time, people are like, actually, let's just be tough on crime. And then now prosecutors are the hot shit.
Right.
But the it was really interesting. He compares prosecution to stand-up comedy and defense as improv because you have to think on your feet. You know, you got.
Well, that's probably why prosecutors are more popular now, because improv is trash.
Well done. I know this is the wrong audience for that kind of thing.
Oh boy, is it ever!
Yeah. Either way, it's a really interesting book. It's a very interesting, you know.
If every criminal was defended by an improv troupe, I would want every criminal to go to prison for the rest of their lives.
I need a. First of all, I need a motive. Somebody give me a motive.
How's the jury gonna understand? Like the jury has to figure out what the crime is from the words they're mumbling.
Right, yeah.
Like
and
one
then
of those
one
things.
Of the jurors comes over and starts posing the defendant in certain ways. It's like, oh, why'd you hand me this basket of grapes, sir? All right, off we go to the airplane store. And scene. Now, what you just saw was completely improvised.
We know.
Yeah.
We know,
yeah.
Dude.
So, super. I never took any improv classes, but we did it for fun in high school. I'm not good at these things.
That's not a thing do for fun.
Uh-huh.
So what are we talking about today? We're talking about, this is a different sort of crime than we normally cover because this involves some violence.
Oh, okay. I mean, you could say that we study financial violence.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's kind of an interesting,
but
yeah.
This is real violence. That's
okay.
Why I made that.
Punches and kicks.
Distinction.
Okay. A couple there's of takedowns.
No, there's just guns and masks.
So you're just talking about, wait, so, I mean, is there gunfire? Are they going shoot, bang, bang?
I don't believe there is any gunfire. There's just guns and someone almost getting away with a whole lot of money.
Mm.
Now, the stuff we're going to talk about is probably really familiar to everyone who read the November 1992 Texas Monthly article that a lot of these facts come from.
Oh, the almost grave bank robbery, right?
Yeah, sorry if we're going over stuff that...
It's a little tired.
Yeah, it was just in my RSS feed yesterday. Uh-huh. Come on. So sorry if we're covering old ground.
26
here.
Years ago. It's
The article is called The Almost Great Bank Robbery, and you can find it on the internet. I promise you we didn't go to Texas and track down a decades-old copy of Texas Monthly.
No, but no microfiche use.
We would if we had to. We wouldn't do that.
No.
So let's talk. This is what we're talking about is the biggest bank robbery in San Antonio history, Danger.
Still to this present day?
It's a pretty big bank robbery. All and right. We'll get to why it's still probably topping the charts. It is the heist that inspired the song Desperate Times, which you can hear playing under us right now.
Wow!
This song, you remember Desperate Times by Charlie
Robinson?
Hang on,
hang on. This is my favorite part.
Oh, there it is.
Gets me every time. Yeah. I love that. So, it might feel like a random place in the song because we don't know what's playing right now, but it's truly the sweetest.
No, we nailed it.
Yep.
So
not the biggest bank robbery in Texas or American history, just San Antonio, just the one city in Texas.
I mean, every city has to have their biggest bank robbery of all time, Danger. Why are you being this way? What's Glendale's
biggest bank robbery?
Yeah.
They
had that really crazy one, didn't they?
That was North Hollywood.
Oh, that was North Hollywood. Well,
that was the big famous one.
Come on, what's the difference?
I'm sure they got a bite at the In-N-Out in Glendale before they went out and rampaged and...
That's probably why they robbed that bank, because In-N-Out is trash.
Policing. Oh, well, I will fight you. I will rob a bank and I will use that
really?
Money
Should
to
we
fight
solicit
you.
Donations from charity first?
Yes.
Good. All right. So let's talk about this bank robbery.
Dateline, September 21st, 1991.
The Texas Commerce Bank robbery in San Antonio on the morning of September 21st, never forget, 1991. Kelly McGinnis and Lisa Silvis arrived for their 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. shift as tellers at the Texas Commerce Bank in San Antonio. What kind of garbage shift is that? 9 a.m. to 1? Why even get out of bed?
I mean, it's 5 hours. It's a part-time job. Maybe they're taking improv classes at night.
Lazy.
Valuable kind of education, that
lazy
is.
Lazy fucks.
I know the San Antonio improv scene, it's booming.
There are no good comics in San Antonio. This particular location was a motor bank, meaning it only provided drive-through services and was relatively low security. So any budding bank robbers out there, obviously, you're going to want to rob a motor bank first.
Huh.
Because if that's...
So that's like the bunny slopes?
Take anything away from this episode, I want it to be that.
Right.
Also, we should mention that this is the last episode of the season. I think we talked about it before we started recording.
Right.
Yeah, we'll be back in like a month or so. We're going to regroup.
Right.
And
Adam's going on tour.
I'm going on tour.
He's moving.
We're going to have a bunch of shows that are going to be running in seasons coming soon.
I'm getting vocal surgery, so I start sounding more like John Hamm.
Danger's going to sound like a girl when we come back.
Cigarettes. It's toasted. Yeah, that wasn't very good. That's what the money's for.
Oh, this is John Hamm you're trying to do? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm just saying.
Sorry, John Hamm, if you're listening, and we know you are. So
he lives very close by.
So anyway, let's get back to it. This particular location, it's a motor bank. No security guards. No security cameras. Like, what if someone tries
to seriously?
Pass a bad check at least? Don't you want a glimpse of their grill?
Wow. Okay. That's basically an advertisement for like, hey, free theft.
I wonder if it said that.
Just like a sign of
low ATM fees, no security cameras, no guards.
Huh. Okay.
FDIC insured. We'll get the money back. Wink, wink.
Was there at least like the plexiglass thing so you can't just drive up and stick a gun at somebody and go like, can you please?
No, it was just
give me,
a table.
It's basically like a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
We got there at the same time. Awesome. Okay.
There were also no dye packs in the teller drawers.
Oh, man.
I was driving past a bank that just got robbed when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a tornado of pink smoke and bills flying in the air. And we did get out and grab some of those bills, but then quickly realized, oh, we cannot spend bills with bank dye on them.
One at a time. You can't go to Del Taco and be like, hey, sorry, I'm going to have to pay you in this pink $100 bill, friend.
There were a couple that had enough dye on them that I could have still used them, but I was like, no, we ended up just giving them back to the bank.
Okay. American.
If anything, we did a public service. We got out and gathered that money, briefly thought about spending it, and then gave it back.
If a bill has more than 60% of the bill remaining, then legally it's still tender. You could have cut off 40% of that bill.
It also would have been hard to prove that. Like, I could have been like, I just got this.
I just found it. It floated over here. I thought it was just like an Easter fun job times.
You know how sometimes you're driving through a mall parking lot and a plume of pink smoke and dollar bills appears?
Sure. Yeah.
Happens to the best of us.
Sometimes the National Mint has a fun day. And they, it's the take your daughter to work and you get to, and you get picked
Money those. Fun day.
There you go.
It's what they call their Friday potlucks at the Treasury. So customers never step foot inside this branch. So it's like one of those.
Just drive up only.
One of those Dunkin' Donuts where you're like, can I please sit? And they're like, no. You see it in here? We can't even fucking move,
the East
dude.
Coast is weird.
They have Dunkin' Donuts here. America runs on Dunkin'.
It doesn't. But I mean, like, it just
now we are going to fucking fight.
Driving on the highway. Yeah, In-N-Out versus Dunkin' Donuts. It's going down.
Yeah, that seems like a
But like driving down the highway,
makes sense.
Like the just having, it's. I mean, it's fast food, isn't it?
Will you finish your driving down the highway that's having analogy so we can move on?
No, let's go.
Perfect. So customers never set foot inside this bank. So executives thought, hey, chances of this place getting robbed, pretty slim.
Right. I don't want to spend $70 on a security camera. What's the point?
And that would make sense to me if it wasn't for the fact that people still who work there have to go in and out. And that's how this bank ends up getting robbed. Like, unless there's some sort of Jetsons pneumatic tube that they jump through and then just emerge in the bank without going through any doors. You got a door. It's going to get fucking robbed to put a security guard there.
Trampoline, skylight. Done.
Yeah, I suppose that would do it. So when Kelly and Lisa arrive for their shift, Kelly unlocks the first of two doors leading inside the bank. And as she and Lisa walk toward the second door, a man wearing a maintenance uniform, gloves, a rubber mask, and a beanie slips in behind them.
And they didn't notice?
Apparently not.
Huh.
Kelly unlocked the second door, turned around to say something to Lisa, and noticed the man aiming a gun at her. Danger.
That's a bad morning.
Speaking of danger.
Yeah, that's a very dangerous
gun
situation.
Gun pointed at her face.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that every time we mention this gun, man. You have no idea. So she saw the man aiming a gun at her face, speaking of danger. And he yelled at them to disable the alarm, which would automatically go off if not disconnected within 45 seconds after the first door opened.
This guy really strategized ahead of time, didn't he?
Well, right there, if I was like that alone makes me when I first started going through these notes, that alone, I was like, oh, this is an inside job. This guy knows something about this bank.
Uh-huh.
Unless every bank works that way where you have four. Is that another thing you can look up on the website?
Exactly,
no security
seconds.
Cameras. Yeah. 60-second delay on the alarm system. Low financing.
And no cameras.
And no cameras.
Yeah,
I would
they
bank
say
there.
It twice.
Yeah. So the robber restrained Kelly's hands with plastic handcuffs and ordered Lisa to open the vault room, which contained two large safes. Oh, yeah.
Those safes are in danger.
I don't get it. What do you mean?
Move on. Just go.
He gave Lisa a plastic bag to fill with cash from one of the vaults and ignored the second safe after they told him it was filled with coins.
All right.
You pretentious fuck. Those spend just like real money.
But it's heavy. It's heavy.
Have some fucking stick-to-itiveness.
What's heavier, a pound of coins or a pound of bills?
We'll never know.
To go to the pound of bills.
We'll never know. He also demanded they open their teller drawers. When Kelly had trouble remembering her combination, He put a gun to her head and said, quote, "I'm going to blow your fucking head off," which seems like the right line for that situation, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, it gets right to the point. You get a little you get a little grotesque with the naughty words. It's an imminent threat.
Because you don't want to get like too clever and be like, guess what this is? It's a gun. I know it's a gun.
It's a squirt gun. But here, what else I have? Am I this? Oh, and here's another gun. But this is a trick lighter.
That's when you get tricky with the questions. Right. If it's like a broomstick you're holding to the back of her head and you're like, guess what this is? And she goes, a gun. You're like, well, yeah.
Yeah. And then you just go with it.
It's a gun.
But if she guesses right, then she gets a prize.
I went through a haunted house a couple years ago with Vanessa Gritton. And I got to the end, and I'm very hard to rattle in a haunted house. I'm not an asshole about it. I don't like walk through like, oh, here goes the guy. But I'm also like it's a haunted house. I know I'm not going to get fucking murdered. And at one point, they put you in a really tight kind of closet room where you can't move, and they're trying to like,
I don't care for that.
Get your claustrophobia going.
That's me.
And it just, nothing was working. So finally, this girl dressed as like a zombie nurse opens the door and rubs this thing against my face and goes, guess what that is? And I was like, I don't know. And she goes,
it's a good answer.
And she goes, it's a Jolly Rancher, and just ran off.
Oh.
And the haunted house was over. I was like, well, that was a very cute ending to this.
Couldn't break ATV.
Can I have that Jolly Rancher, please?
Ooh, maybe it was a really gross flavor, like watermelon. Yeah. What? I'm getting weird stares
what
because watermelon's
fuck?
A bad Jolly Rancher flavor?
You.
What?
Jesus
all right.
Christ.
What?
Why do we even do this podcast?
To find out that apparently you guys
the
like
financial
the worst.
Crime is what money you're spending on Jolly Ranchers that aren't watermelon.
I mean, any, God, just any.
What
Jolly
do you like,
Ranchers
cinnamon?
Really my thing.
Cinnamon, you fucking 90-year-old fuck.
I actually do. I like cinnamon candies. They're delicious.
Can I get a hamburger plain with only onions and a black cup of coffee, please?
Give me those.
With
what
a
those
side
originals?
Of cinnamon candy.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't have cinnamon candy? Go to the general store.
Could you have those wrapped, unmarked yellow discs that we still don't know what the flavor is, even 70 years into this enterprise?
Butterscotch.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's still, absolutely butterscotch.
I don't need a lot of candy anymore.
All right, we should get back to it.
I'm just saying, if it's not Fun Dip, you're wasting your time.
So when we last left off, Kelly was about to get her head fucking blown
off.
Yeah,
right. That moment.
So she, for some reason, panics. And she pulls open a random empty drawer and claims that it's her drawer.
Nice.
Which, why? Don't be a hero, Kelly. A hero is nothing but a sandwich.
But no, it was easy to open. Wait, what?
I suppose that's true. Don't act like you've never heard that saying before.
I actually haven't. I like it.
And so Lisa then yells at her and says, no, open the real one or this guy's going to kill us both. And Kelly's finally able to remember the combination. This guy grabs the cash from her drawer. He asks the tellers how to leave the building, which isn't this a bank with no lobby? How hard can getting out be? Maybe just
I'm
head out
this
the doors
being on
we came
the
in.
Street. Is this not like just out next to like an Arby's?
There's an entrance in the West Wing. Mm. This is a fucking 50 square foot building, probably. Just leave, dude. And so he asks the tellers how to leave. He takes both their keys. In less than 5 minutes, danger, he got $242,624.
A lot of twos, a lot of fours.
That is a whole lot of money. That is an astonishing amount when you take into account that the average bank robbery only nets a few thousand dollars.
Wait, what?
Which, if we're talking like 15, 20 minutes work, that's still really good money.
Yeah.
Any successful bank robbery is good pay.
But the movies tell us you rob a bank and then you're on Easy Street. You're trying to tell me this my whole life I've believed that if you rob a bank, then you get to go to the Bahamas or whatever. And in reality, a stick-up gets you basically a couple of car payments.
I think you're mistaking a well-planned heist for a crackhead sticking up a 7-Eleven.
Okay.
These are two radically different things.
No, you're saying that a bank robbery gets you a couple of $1,000. I imagine, like, I've always imagined that if you go to a bank and you have a gun and you say, gimme, 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 then you get to walk out with at least five to six figures, man.
I think most bank robberies also are more of a discreet thing where a person walks up and slides a note and says, I have a gun. Don't give me any fucking ruckus. Give me the money and I'm just going to walk out of here.
I guess I just believed that bank robbery was a much more lucrative enterprise than it apparently is.
It's not. I'm sorry. All right, so I guess you're going to have to find a new profession.
That's kind of disappointing. Either way, 242 grand. That's pretty.
It's good
pretty
money.
Good. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
So the two tellers waited in the vault for a few more seconds until they heard the robber leave. Then Kelly hit the alarms and Lisa called 911. Enter FBI Special Agent Kurt Hunt.
Oh, that's his real name?
Kurt Hunt.
A man
I'm gonna have
lived
to say
his
that
life
very slowly
yeah.
every time.
Kurt, like, I'm looking at it and I'm trying and I'm still kind of concerned that we're going to.
Yeah, every time that guy must
go off
get
the deep end there.
Even slightly aggravated, people are probably like, stop being such a hurt cunt, dude.
Ugh, ding.
Anyway.
Wow.
He's going to kill me in my sleep someday.
Kurt Hunt.
Just kidding.
Here we go.
Every FBI agent from your favorite 90s story is dead now. Just like dogs in 90s movies.
They got. What, they only last 9 years?
Yeah, I don't know. Kurt might be alive. That's just a rule I made up. So Kurt Hunt, he's at his home in San Antone when he received a call about the robbery. He rushes to the scene where he and other agents begin scouring the vicinity for any clues.
Did he have a magnifying glass?
Probably,
yeah.
And a metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
In case he got away with those coins after all. They also interviewed the tellers with Lisa telling them the robber was, quote, probably a black man because of the way he talked. Come on, Lisa, don't be that way.
Way to class it up there, Lisa.
I hope he was like, excuse me, I'm a black man. Give me all your money, please. So Hunt pretty much right away realizes that this had to have been an inside job because the teller or the robber knew too much about the teller's routines and the bank layout, even though he apparently got lost trying to get out of there. He avoided a large safe that the tellers didn't have access to on Saturdays and went straight to the vault. Why wouldn't you at least walk past that safe and go, hey, what's the story with that safe?
Yeah. Can we get into that? Can we?
So you can get it on record and be like, yeah, at least I asked about that safe.
Golly gosh.
But no, he just walked past it.
The perfect crime.
Criminals are so fucking dumb sometimes, man. It's great.
There are so many things you have to think about if you're going to pull off a successful heist, man.
He also felt the need to disguise his voice so the tellers wouldn't recognize it. So is this guy just, I wonder what that means. Because what she said the voice sounded like a black dude. And is he just like, there's no black people in San Antonio?
Right. Hello, I'm an African-American, and the meatballs, and I here with my skin, which is darker than your skin, to get the monies from you safe.
Yeah.
That's probably what he said.
Probably, yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
That's how you disguise a voice.
It's-a-me, a banker robber.
Uh-huh.
That guy sounds black.
According to Lisa, apparently didn't get out of San Antonio much.
Anytime, I don't know. Whenever I, in a crime, when the person gets to, sounded like a black dude, I'm always like, it's not a black dude.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely not a black
right.
dude.
Right, that's just, ugh, God.
It is you, probably.
Well, yeah, way to get robbed and also come off really badly.
But, yeah, he said the robber felt the need to disguise his voice, which seems like a weird detail to figure out right there on the spot.
Uh-huh.
But a couple days after the robbery, FBI agent Frank Montoya, more like Hurt Cunt, am I right?
I can't find the there you go. I was going to say, is that Inigo's father? Inigo Montoya? You can't, yeah.
Right.
All right.
From
cool.
Princess
yep,
Bride?
Princess Bride.
Yeah.
His favorite movie growing up.
It's fine. So FBI agent Frank Montoya learned that bank employees needed computerized access cards to enter the employee parking area, which was located on the upper level of a parking garage near the bank. Come on.
Okay.
How do you miss this detail, people? Go on. What?
I'm still just having trouble picturing where this bank is. Is it in? Is it underground? Is it indoors? Is it next to an Arby's?
It's in Texas. San Antonio.
All right, cool. Got it.
Texas.
Yep.
So is that what you meant?
I meant like the actual physical layout of like...
Well, haven't you ever seen a building that's just that you can't go in?
A building you... I know, like
there's
kiosks?
Some, like, yeah, well, it's like... You've never seen, like, a coffee stand in the middle of a parking lot where you can just pull up, but you can't go inside. Or, like, a hot dog stand.
Yeah.
A food truck. Like, you ever seen a food truck, Danger?
Sure, yes.
Imagine a food truck with no wheels and a foundation instead.
Okay, so
and
it's like a...
And it gives money instead of food.
Okay.
And you can drive up to it.
Got it.
Other than that, it's just like a food truck.
But he still couldn't figure out how to leave.
Maybe that was their one way of being like, we don't want to seem like we know too much about the place. Better ask for directions out of this cave. Who knows?
Okay.
But it's just a bank, like the part of your bank that you drive up to. Imagine if your bank was just that.
Okay.
Just the windows and the lanes. I don't know why this is so hard. But so he pulled up the parking log for the morning of the robbery and saw that Lisa Silva's card had been used at 8:20 that morning.
40 minutes prior to the incident.
However, old dirty Lisa parked her car in a separate section of the parking garage where no access card was required. What are you up to, Lisa?
Huh. Makes it a little more interesting that you're like, oh, yeah, he was probably a black guy.
He sounded like a black man.
Mm-hmm.
The investigators quietly, they quietly begin to suspect 19-year-old Lisa, and her 28-year-old husband, Jack Neely, but they had to be careful, because Jack was a highly decorated ex-Marine and a second-year police officer with the San Antonio Police Department, so that motherfucker might kill you if you ask him the wrong question. I think that's what they meant by be careful.
Okay.
Like armed and dangerous.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Or a flight risk, or someone that knows all of their patterns.
Or a fight risk.
There you go.
I don't know how I do it. I don't know how I do it.
You're a professional, Adam.
So Jack did it. I'm sold.
Yeah.
For one thing, his name's Jack. Mm-hmm. And aside from Caitlin's kid, there are very few good Jacks in the world.
Aww.
And also, he's a second-year San Antonio police officer and an ex-Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And
still green.
All of that says bank robber to me.
And he's and he's married to someone that's still a teenager?
I don't think they're... they were married?
Yeah, it's kind
of
gross.
What a couple of sluts.
Yeah.
So he had shown up at the bank a few hours after the robbery, saying he'd been sleeping all morning after working the night shift, if you know what I mean. And a bank executive hired him on the spot to work as a security guard for the motor bank during his off-duty hours.
So he...
So this bank robbery just keeps paying off.
So he just shows up. It's like, oh, what's all the hubbub? Well, me and all my skills are for hire.
I know you're not expecting me,
mm-hmm.
but sorry I'm late.
Yeah, I've been elsewhere all morning.
I've been working on my security muscles overnight.
Wow.
I'm Jack Neely. I'm a white man. So they hire Jack to be a security guard just because he shows up, which that's great. And despite his military accomplishments and a promising career in law enforcement, Jack was struggling with multiple financial and personal issues. His father died in a plane crash when Jack was 6. Get over it. And his mother raised him and his 2 sisters on her Social Security checks. She should have cashed those for money instead of raising the kids on them. That's a dumb joke.
That was,
I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that's something I would say, man.
Yeah, I know. I don't want you to feel left out.
Better than that.
After graduation, he joined the Marines, where he was, by all accounts, an exceptional soldier. He earned 2 good conduct medals and multiple commendations. Show off.
Participation award.
Yeah.
You know, perfect attendance.
While on a Marine security guard tour in West Africa, he received a Navy Achievement Medal for saving a fellow soldier from drowning in the Gulf of Guinea.
Huh.
Nice.
Yeah, all right.
Way to be, Jack.
Yeah, okay.
In the mid-80s, he was stationed in the Bahamas, where he met his first wife, Michelle. They had 2 kids together. What the fuck was he doing stationed in the Bahamas? What do we need the military there for?
Wave patrol? I don't know.
Yeah. Do we have like a fleet of jet skis that carry out covert acts on our behalf? Because that would be dope.
I mean, looking out for tourists, I guess. Kidnap tourists.
I don't know.
What's the pirate situation in the Bahamas in the 80s?
I don't think it was too intense.
All right.
In 89, after 8 years of service, he was honorably discharged and entered the San Antonio Police Academy. He successfully cleared a battery of tests and interviews and graduated 6th out of 38 cadets. Why not 5th?
Slept in that day.
Yeah. His childhood dream of becoming a cop, gross, had come true, and he threw himself into the job.
All right.
In 1990, Jack and Michelle separated.
What? 1 year after his new job.
Huh. And their divorce was finalized the following year. His ex-wife later said she left him because he was too preoccupied with work. What's a second-year cop getting preoccupied with work for?
Man, I don't know. If you're a rookie, if you're a rook, if you're a boot, as they call
you
in the industry.
Can't stop thinking about these perks, yep. Baby.
Got to get out there. Got to sharpen those observational skills.
Come to bed with all this crack still on the streets? No way.
Yeah.
So in September 1990, Lisa Silvas called the San Antonio Police Department about a disturbance at her apartment complex. Jack responded to the call and was instantly smitten with the recent high school graduate.
Gross.
Ugh.
Gross. You're 10 years older than her, bro.
Illegal. Legal doesn't always mean right, Jack.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Let her go to college first, at least. My God. Ugh.
Makes you wonder what that disturbance was, though. It was probably a black guy was outside.
So Lisa told him she had a boyfriend, but she didn't discourage him from stopping by with handwritten notes and gifts because Lisa's not that great of a person.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That, as we will find out, these are both awful people who probably should have been injured in that bank robbery, but they were not. Within a few months, Lisa had ended her relationship with her high school boyfriend, Bert Carer, and moved in with Jack. Guy's got Carer in his last name. You're going to fucking ditch him? You know that dude cares.
But you care too much.
Bert, who was a college student during the day and a Subway sandwich artist by night.
We could just strike the word artist from that whole thing. He's just a sub.
Hey, I've worked at Subway.
Mm-hmm.
It is an art.
It.
Back off.
Oh, yeah? Four jalapenos versus five?
It impacts the flavor profile in a very profound way, I'll have you know.
All right.
Thank you so much. So he wasn't able to provide the lifestyle that 19-year-old Lisa had become accustomed to living in her one-bedroom apartment in San Antonio. He would complain about how much she spent on her clothes, hair, and nails, and she would complain that they never went out to eat or did anything special, as if dating a fucking sandwich artist isn't special in and of itself. Most of them don't even get famous till after they die. Cut him a fucking break, Lisa.
I don't really think there's that much glamour in the sandwich arts.
Spoken like someone who's never worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, on the other hand, spoiled Lisa. He would send flowers to the bank where she worked and bring her food. She was flattered by the attention, even when it bordered on obsession, which it sounds like it did constantly.
Right.
Pretty much all the time. It doesn't border on obsession. It sounds like he was just obsessed.
He was just obsessed with this person.
With her. In letters, he wrote that she was, quote, the only true woman I've ever been with, and, quote, please be mine forever, if not physically, then spiritually.
What the hell?
Ew.
So
what does that
what
mean?
What does that mean?
That sounds so much worse.
So, what? Bang whoever you want, but care only for me? What is this?
Have sex with whoever you want. I'm just going to murder you in your sleep so we're together forever spiritually.
Gonna
but after that,
yeah,
you're free.
Going to consume you
right,
emotionally and eventually, you know, just sort of we're going to use those sandwich arts to... Wait, no, it's a different person. Never mind. Good.
Don't you slander the sandwich arts on this podcast. He would show up at stores where she said she was shopping. Or
ew, God.
If she went to a movie, he would drive by the theater parking lot to check for her car.
This sounds
like he's just doing his job as a cop.
God, go arrest some criminals there, fella.
When Jack went to Miami, where his ex-wife now lived, to visit his kids, Lisa slept with Bert and told Jack to make him jealous.
What the hell?
Lisa sounds great.
Lisa is Lady Macbeth.
Lisa and Jack deserve each other.
Holy crap,
these are terrible
people.
They really are. Jack knew where Bert worked and would pull him over, telling him to stay away from Lisa because, yeah... Bert is definitely the aggressor in that situation, you fucking testosterone-fueled fuckface. On one occasion, he even pulled over Bert's new girlfriend and gave her a ticket for having an expired license plate. Hey, laws are laws.
That's his job.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry so much.
Got to make sure you didn't
is just Jack being responsible. That's a glimmer of responsibility in a sea of irresponsibility, if you ask me.
Right. Faithful execution.
Despite their often turbulent relationship, Jack and Lisa were infatuated with each other, and in May 1991, about 8 months after they met, Jack proposed to Lisa. Good choice!
This is very unhealthy. Listeners, if you take nothing else, don't obsess. Don't obsess. Don't use your your magical cop lights on the top of your cop car to pull over people because you don't like that they know other people that you're obsessed about.
And yeah. If you're a cop and you use your lights
like
for
the cruising
nefarious
through
purposes, you're awful. Now, if you're not a cop and you use those lights,
that's just weird. I mean, this whole thing is weird.
It's just fun.
But yeah, but the cruising through movie parking lots looking for the car so he can dream of the moment that they reconnect with each other. Like that's some seriously like messed up, creepy high schooler shit.
It's troubling for sure.
I don't like it.
So in a later interview, Lisa said that she was, quote, the happiest girl alive that night.
I believe that.
Yeah,
she probably was
dumb enough to be
She's
happy.
She's got an
by
emotional it. Imbalance.
But surprisingly, things were difficult for the couple. Jack was making $1,600 a month as a police officer. And although he was living in his apartment rent-free in exchange for some apartment security work, he was paying $250 a month for child support. So, dude, you have, that's what, $1,350 spare dollars that you don't have to spend on rent? What kind of fucking money vacuum was Lisa that you can't live in 1990s San Antonio on that much
and
money?
And also, she's getting paid. Like, she's working. She's not staying home.
Oh, that's right. She works at a bank.
They got two dual income, no kids. Oh, wait. Well, two kids.
Hate these two so much.
Yeah.
So his ex-wife also had taken his car to Miami, and due to his poor credit, he wasn't able to get any loans. Huh. Aww. And now he had a fiance who wanted to be treated like a princess and had a wedding to plan.
Yeah. These people suck.
Yeah.
The ex-wife, I mean, smart. Smart. Get that car. Go to Miami.
Yeah, I'm surprised one of these two didn't just turn this into a murder for life insurance money plan at one point. It was clear to investigators that the motive was there. Jack was in debt and needed the money. Mm-hmm. But there were other clues pointing to the couple also danger. For example, okay. Lisa never reported her parking access card missing, which that's a thing someone working at a place with parking that requires a card would do immediately.
Yeah.
Because those are going to be better spots.
That would get real annoying.
The robber restrained and pointed his gun at Kelly, but not Lisa.
Yeah. Lisa immediately said it was probably a black guy.
Right. The disposable handcuffs used on Kelly were the kind San Antonio cops would use for mass arrests.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's weird.
So wait, disposable handcuffs used on Kelly, but not Lisa?
Yeah, he didn't tie up or even point the gun at Lisa.
Oh, so he restrains the girl that he's trying to get to open the safe. That seems kind of backwards. Like, you need your hands to open a safe, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. But, wait, no, but sorry. Kelly was threatened and said, you have to give me your drawer. I'm gonna blow your fucking head off.
I think he tied him up after they opened the drawer.
Okay.
Probably.
Sorry. I have a lot of questions about the comings and goings of this event. There's a lot of detail.
Okay. It's fine. So, also 9 days before the robbery, Jack and Lisa went to the Bexar County Courthouse and secretly got married. So now that they were husband and wife, they could not be forced to testify against each other if one of them committed a crime.
Why do we have that rule?
I don't know.
I mean, forced to testify? I don't know. Like, it just seems so weird. Like, it just seems like a really big loophole in our legal system.
That your wife can't be forced to testify against you? Like, that's been a rule forever. Like, spouses can't be compelled to testify.
That just seems strange.
Yeah, why do we have attorney-client privilege, HIPAA, fuck all this shit,
okay,
man.
Yeah.
Open DNA databases for all. Give me a swab, danger. I'm putting it in a deposit.
Settle for depository.
So FBI agent Hunt and his team tried to get Lisa to confess first, telling her that if she cooperated, she'd get a light sentence. Mm. But she did not waver, telling investigators over and over again that she didn't know anything. One detective said, quote, she was good, real good. Her body language, everything about her was perfect. So on the one hand, way to watch your investigation discovery, Lisa, that's good. But also, what if she wasn't involved, cop? What if that explains her really good body language and really solid answers?
Hey, man.
Maybe she just didn't have anything to do with this.
Everyone's a suspect. in a situation like this, in which privileged access had to come from inside somewhere.
The FBI talked to Kelly McGinnis next. Kelly and Lisa were close friends. Lisa had asked her to be a bridesmaid in her wedding.
That's a shitty thing to do to your bridesmaid.
The agents wanted Kelly to get Lisa to confess, but she kept insisting that Lisa and Jack had nothing to do with the robbery. Finally, the FBI brought in old bad boy Jack Neely. By this time, Jack had figured out that he was a suspect and refused to allow the agents to search his car or apartment without a warrant.
That's the move.
That is the move.
Yeah.
He asked if he was under arrest, and when Hunt said no, Jack got up and left. Now,
that's the move. Yeah.
That, I don't know why I don't see that more on Investigation Discovery.
Yeah.
Because that would be me. If I committed the crime or not, I'd be like, am I under arrest? Nope. Peace.
I'm gonna go. Yep.
I'm out of here. You can come find me when you have evidence or when you have faked enough evidence to come find me.
Or a warrant.
Yeah.
Get, you know, talk to the judge.
Warren ain't nothing but a... I don't know. I was going to make a joke about
it. It's a nice name for a boy.
Yeah.
Warren.
Warrant?
No, Warren.
Warrant would be a cool name for a boy.
Yeah. All right.
So the FBI and the San Antonio police continued to interview other bank employees as well as Jack and Lisa's relatives, including Jack's mother, Victoria, hoping they can pin this crime on someone. Oh, no, I just added that last part. However, the investigators still didn't have enough evidence to press charges, and Lisa continued to work at the bank, and Jack continued to work as a police officer. About 2 weeks after the robbery, Jack and Lisa told their family and friends they were going to Florida for their honeymoon.
Instead, with all that debt that we have.
Right.
Yeah, we're gonna take debt airlines.
And instead they flew to the Cayman Islands. Nothing weird about flying to the Cayman Islands after you maybe just robbed a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so on October 12th, William Murray, Victoria's husband and Jack's stepfather, called the Bexar County Sheriff's Office. While walking around his farm, he noticed some soil had been recently disturbed. When I read this part, I was like, oh.
Kelly? Did they bury Kelly?
I was like, oh my God, he killed Lisa. And I hope he died too.
Yeah.
While walking around his farm, he noticed some soil had been recently disturbed. He began digging and found a blue duffel bag filled with thousands of dollars.
Huh. That's not a plant.
No.
You won't get corn from that, sir.
The bag contained $147,779 in cash, including the bait bills, which were a set of $100 bills whose serial numbers had been recorded in case of robbery. A bank teller would know, and a bank teller would also bundle them together and write the words Mexico money across the top because she knew those bills were less likely to be traced in Mexico. The FBI agents also found a Wish Upon a Star key ring from Flower Bluff High School in the bag, a prom memento from Lisa's former high school.
Hmm.
I wonder if Jack took her to prom.
Oh, God. Yeah. So this is everything they need to convict these people, basically.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they buried all the evidence in their backyard, which
in stepdad's backyard.
They probably didn't have a backyard
because
they lived in an apartment.
Right, San Antonio.
And because there's no grass in San Antonio.
Is there not? I haven't been.
That whole fucking part of the country is all desert, man.
I just know that the Sonic Burger in Sonora, Texas is the absolute worst customer service experience I've ever had.
Customer service experience?
Customer service. Excuse me. I misspoke a little.
Ooh.
A little.
What do they do at that Sonic?
Well, I'm on tour with my band. I ordered some food. The rest of my friends ate their entire meal before I was given mine. And then I said, what's going on? And they said, oh, it'll be right out. They brought me the wrong food. I went to correct the order. They said, okay. They tried to charge me again. And then I said, you know what? It's cool. We're basically done here. Sonora Burger, Sonic Burger. Sonora, Texas is Sonic Burger. You are the worst.
We fucking stuck it to them, man.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I'll be surprised if they're still in business.
If
after
we've done
this
nothing else about this with this show, then shuttering the Sonic Burger in Sonora, Texas, which actually is probably the only thing to do in Sonora, Texas. So maybe now I feel kind
of
bad.
And that you probably just had one bad experience out of thousands of good experiences.
They messed up in three different ways. It took like a half an hour to get a hamburger. It was garbage. I don't stand for that.
I feel like we should move on. So the couple was arrested on October 15th, 1991. Jack was charged with armed bank robbery, and Lisa was charged with aiding and abetting armed robbery.
So the wedding's off?
Prosecutors later added an additional charge of carrying a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence.
Ooh. All right.
On February 14th, 1992, Happy Valentine's Day, Jack and Lisa were found guilty of both counts.
Youch.
At their sentencing hearing, Lisa finally turned against Jack.
Oh, because of course she did.
Oh, you fucking hero.
What an asshole.
Thank you. She says, quote, "I realize now that I fooled myself into believing Jack loved me.
Ew.
I'm guilty of being a fool. I'm not guilty of being a bank robber."
Oh my.
Yes, you fucking are.
Yeah, you are.
Shut up.
Lady Macbeth, manipulative ass hat.
You were about 22 years early on that line of defense in this country. Nah, I missed that. Probably 30. I'll edit that out. So,
a lot of holes in this episode.
That's what I do. That's why everything we record is actually an hour and 45 minutes.
Ah.
People don't know that. I cut it down to like 50.
Mm-hmm.
So her fucking belly aching in court didn't work. She was sentenced to 12
Holy
years
crap.
And 8 months and served about 6 years. Jack was sentenced to 15 years and 1 month and served about 10 years. The missing $95,000 was never recovered.
All right. Well, they got a Bahama or a Cayman Islands trip out of it, I guess. Hope it was worth it.
Can't beat that. While in prison, Jack continued to send love letters to Lisa
because,
of course, but Lisa never responded because, again, of course, she said in an interview that Jack would never admit he masterminded the robbery because that would mean Lisa would be released and might find someone new. I feel like Lisa has not looked up on Texas law. Jack could provide video evidence that she was not involved, and Texas would be like, yeah, but you're already in prison, so...
Why not death penalty?
Yeah, what are we supposed to do? We can't just
Texas.
Let you out.
We're bored. Spin the roulette wheel. Let's see how we're extending your sentence.
That cell isn't going to occupy itself, lady. So just a couple more highlights from the Texas Monthly article. This is a quote. One San Antonio police detective who investigated the case speculates that Jack, insecure over Lisa, decided he had to rob the bank so he could provide a good lifestyle for his new wife, perhaps by persuading her to help him with the robbery. Jack also realized he was binding her inextricably to him.
Ugh.
And just maybe, as Lisa claims, make sure that if he got caught, she would go down too.
Creepy.
I mean, if nothing else, she sounds like someone who deserves to go down too with Jack.
If I sew my foot onto your leg, then we'll be together forever.
Okay, Jack.
These people are gross.
They really are. But it's clear she is not entirely innocent. For one thing, she would have known to mark those bait bills as Mexico money. And the robber would not have been able to take as much money as he did without inside help. After he was released from prison, Jack started a business named Tactical Transportation and Security Services, LLC.
Sounds legit.
Which he claimed was solely a transportation business.
And I'm only transporting my love for Lisa.
As people convicted of robbery are barred from getting security licenses in Texas.
Wow.
Why?
Wow.
What?
Wow, Texas.
What happened to...
I'm very surprised by Texas.
What happened to personal freedom?
Excuse me? Wow.
Jeez.
Wow, Texas. Wait to get one thing right.
In November 2011, the San Antonio Police Department was notified that Jack was in the parking lot of Cowboys Dance Hall, which there's got to be 150 of those places in Texas, and they're all independently owned
enough.
And operated.
Yeah.
Cowboys Dance Hall, wearing a fake U.S. State Department badge and carrying a gun, he'd been transporting Mexican dignitaries, including a governor, around San Antonio.
Mm, that sounds like transportation and security services.
Yeah, that's pretty great. He was taken into custody in the parking lot where officials recovered a .40 caliber Glock pistol.
So what did those Mexican officials do? They're like, oh, there goes our ride.
They're stuck here.
All right.
They're
well,
like, can someone deport us? Get back to Mexico. Well, you were saying they were stuck here, and they're Mexican dignitaries. They probably
just get an Uber.
Bought a fleet of cars with cash and just drove the mile and a half back to Mexico.
They were in San Antonio. Are corrupt. You're right.
Someone probably t-shirt cannoned them back over the border.
Or hey, again,
same
like
way
I said,
they import Tecate to Dodger Stadium. That's a thing I like to imagine because the Tecate is $2 more because it's imported. It's like it's from Mexico and we're at Dodger Stadium.
Huh.
How much importation did that take?
Yeah. Hmm.
We had this in the trunk of a car for an hour and a half to get it here.
We got
$2 more.
Got to pay the energy bill to get it cold
and
again.
And then the
dude.
Fans just throw them at babies. That's a different story for a different podcast. So he pled guilty in July 2013 to being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm and was sentenced to 41 months in prison.
Wow.
That's 3 years, 5 months?
Sure.
Yeah.
Man, again, Texas, you're surprising me here.
He was released on September 15th, 2017, and is on the market, ladies.
Woo!
Probably. I don't know. I'm sure.
He might have some emotional hangups, however.
Could be. And today, after a series of mergers and acquisitions, Texas Commerce Bank is now part of J.P. Morgan Chase. So if they get robbed again, who fucking cares?
Right, yeah.
It's J.P. Morgan Chase, buddy. Rob them all day.
First thing they did... put a security camera in.
Nah. It's just a bank.
Yeah.
Just a bank with money.
Okay, these people stole. Yes, you know, they lied. They threatened some people. She threatened her own bridesmaid with this whole stupid plan. But the worst thing that they did is they were the most annoying couple possible.
Yeah.
Like, these people were they're the gross people on Facebook, like, just... only posting on their part. I love you, Debbie. I can't wait to see you, Snooker Punch.
They seem like the kind of people that would plan a bank robbery so they could live a better life.
I mean, but also their own. I mean, they've got it. They had a good enough life. I'm just saying these people are the worst because they're super annoying and we don't like them.
Yeah. And you can tell just from the notes that they're both incredibly unstable people who probably feed off each other's instability and excesses to the point that they robbed a bank and almost got away with it.
Yeah. Well,
what could they have done to get away with this, do you think?
I mean, first things first,
he should have tied
park
up
somewhere else.
He should have tied up Lisa.
Yep, tie up
absolutely.
Lisa.
Absolutely. Let's brainstorm this. We'll get it right next time.
All
right.
So we're tying up Lisa.
You got to tie up Lisa. You
got to
threaten to kill her, if for no other reason than that shit she pulled with Bert.
Right. Figure out a way to get that.
But it also makes it look very convincing if you go, you too, Lisa. I mean, yeah. Lady,
yeah,
I'm gonna shoot you too.
I'm gonna
unknown and, woman. And I am a black man who is going to shoot you in the head.
Well, I mean, it's not.
He could have done all that.
He could have done. Yeah, could have done all that.
That
is there a way
good?
He could have opened that door without her security card?
Probably. Well, the door didn't require her. Well, she opened the door and he just snuck in behind her.
Right. Okay.
So if they had kept that part going, then. Yeah, I think the parking card is what fucked them up.
Parking card, knowing everything that's there, and then, yeah, not playing favorites with your hostages.
Yeah, that was a silly idea.
Uh-huh.
But that's how crimes like this work. They're always pretty silly ideas. If it went any better than this, we probably wouldn't be talking about it because we wouldn't know who did it because they would have fucking got away.
Mm-hmm.
And those make for boring podcasts.
I mean, we can speculate. We can go, you know who did it? Tupac did it. You know, he came
back.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Because he and
the progressive left, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just saying, like, all these people that you claim that disappear and live in Cuba, like Elvis and Tupac. Would it have been better if I started with Elvis, you fucking
Tupac
asshole?
Tupac that you think makes him more likely to rob a bank than Elvis.
He was the first person to come in mind who was clearly dead, who died in the 90s, that you like to joke about a lot.
Whoa, this is uncomfortable, if I'm being honest. Hey, what do we...
Such an asshole.
Hey, I just report on the news. That's what I do. Breaking news. A bank robbery in San Antonio, Texas in 1992.
26 years ago, yeah.
So, this was a fun episode. It's nice to do one that involves some actual violence, some getting out there in the, because all of these so far, it's been people in their fucking offices sitting at their
tappity
desks and checking their phones.
No
and
one's looking, so I'm gonna steal from the oldest bank in England.
And it's like, will you go outside and steal something, you lazy idiots?
Right. Do some jumping jacks. You know, run around the block, hit somebody with an elbow, take their wallet.
Enter Jack and Lisa, worst people.
Ugh, God.
I wonder what they're up to now.
I'm sure she's plucking out a doll's hair individually, like one by one, and saying, this is for not being pretty enough. You know? She seems like an unstable person.
Is that what unstable people do, Danger?
That's what I'm speculating that unstable person does.
Okay. So yeah, this was a fun episode. We'll be back in a few weeks with the start of season 2. Season dose.
Yep.
Misfortune.
Hot Lotto.
A financial crimes podcast, season 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Reckoning.
This is the one where Danger dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then the third one's when you
then you come back.
Yep.
We should do that. We should kill you at the end of next season and then just bring you back and not explain it at all.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Danger died. Oh.
I don't see you selling that very well.
Let's just do it now. Oh my God.
I'm suffocation with the pillow.
Damn it, Danger. Before you die, is there anything you want to plug?
Yep. Join your local tennis union, the Glendale Tennis.
I'm sorry, did you say tennis union?
Tenants union.
Ten ants? Dentist union.
What else?
Tennis again.
Okay, yeah. Tennessee.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
I'm sorry, did you say tetanus union? What is a tetanus union? Explain that. Danger Van Gorder, president of the tetanus union.
You should not be making me laugh this hard. You suck. Join your local tenants union.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Specifically Glendale Tenants Union, we've got our crowdfunding page up and running. Please go to bit.ly/GlendaleRentControl to...
Did you say crowdfondling?
Yes. Yep.
Okay,
one by one. Got to go through that crowd. And then listen to countless thousands. I think we're hopefully going to be having a fundraiser for the Tenants Union. Is that enough? I even did a little for the space between tenants.
I don't know what else it would have been.
Yeah.
Go on.
We'll be doing a fundraiser for the union pretty soon. And I got a new one that I want to record. I'll record it at some point. You know, time's tight. And lastly, I'd like to plug the baby that I will be having in September.
Sounds weird every time you say it.
Wife and I are having a baby in September. Just putting a shout out to a little baby coming out.
Little September baby.
Yep. So you might not hear from me for a little bit. I'm still trying to figure out what my life will be.
That baby's gonna kill Danger.
I mean, the odds are good.
Yeah, I suppose.
The odds are strong.
What else do we have to plug? Patreon.com/unpops. $5 a month. Or just give us a dollar or two to show some support.
Just a tip.
There are a lot of Patreons out there, and they don't give you nearly as much shit as we do, baby.
We are a very high volume. And and as I've always said, quantity over quality. Every time.
Motherfucker, we're both.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, mm-hmm? Have you listened to the goddamn network?
No, I haven't.
I'll like put that in reverse, but it's fucking trash.
Okay.
Anyway, patreon.com/unpops, $5 a month. We are the goddamn best, and don't you forget it.
Yep.
Also, I think I'm on tour when this comes out. Me and Chet Wild, May 16th through 20th. Go to unpops.com/tour for dates and to buy tickets. And I think that's it. Danger, say goodbye.
Goodbye. That's season one, everybody. Season one.
Goodbye, everybody. Bravo. We love you physically and spiritually.